Hi, this is Bridget with the New York Times. Friday, February 20th. British police arrest former Prince Andrew in stunning blow to royal family. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, a longtime associate of Jeffrey Epstein, is being investigated on suspicion of misconduct in public office. By Megan Specia, Michael D. Shear, and Michael Levinson. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, once regarded as a dashing war hero and the favorite son of Queen Elizabeth II, was arrested by the British police on Thursday amid widening scrutiny over his ties to the disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Mountbatten Windsor's arrest, on suspicion of misconduct in public office, was a staggering blow to the British monarchy and the latest chapter in his downfall, coming months after his connections to Mr. Epstein led Buckingham Palace to strip him of his royal titles and evict him from his royal residence. The police did not provide any details of the investigation, but the arrest of Mr. Mountbatten Windsor, the younger brother of King Charles III, who was formerly known as Prince Andrew, came after reports suggested that he may have shared confidential information with Mr. Epstein while serving as a British trade envoy, a position he held from 2001 to 2011. The police did not mention the accusations of sexual abuse that have shadowed Mr. Mountbatten Windsor, 66, or the trafficking allegations that Mr. Epstein was facing when he died by suicide in a Manhattan jail in 2019. In a remarkable written statement addressed directly to the British public, Charles said he had learned of his brother's arrest with the deepest concern. What now follows is the full, fair, and proper process by which this issue is investigated, in the appropriate manner and by the appropriate authorities, Charles wrote. In this, as I have said before, they have our full and wholehearted support and cooperation. He concluded his statement with a note of determination. Meanwhile, my family and I will continue in our duty and service to you all, Charles wrote. He later attended an event for London Fashion Week, and his wife, Queen Camilla, went to a lunchtime orchestral concert in the city. The arrest was without precedent in modern British history. The last senior member of the royal family to be arrested in connection with a serious crime was King Charles I, who was executed for treason nearly four centuries ago, on January 30, 1649. The arrest of Mr. Mountbatten Windsor, who was released after around 11 hours in custody, escalated the crisis confronting the British crown amid deepening revelations of his connections to Mr. Epstein and allegations that he sexually abused a young woman trafficked to him by the American. The former prince has denied that he raped the woman, Virginia Roberts Chuffrey. A British anti-monarchy group, Republic, said it had reported evidence of potential misconduct in public office to the Thames Valley Police. The police force west of London that is leading the investigation. Gordon Brown, who was the British Prime Minister when Mr. Mountbatten Windsor was a government trade envoy, issued a statement on Thursday saying that he had provided additional information about Mr. Epstein to the Thames Valley Police ahead of Mr. Mountbatten Windsor's arrest. The Thames Valley Police, citing national guidelines, did not identify the man they had arrested, but confirmed that they had taken a man in his 60s from Norfolk into custody at about 8 a.m., and were carrying out searches at addresses in Berkshire and Norfolk. The police were seen in Norfolk on Thursday morning at the Sandringham Estate, the private 20,000-acre country retreat of Charles and Camilla, where Mr. Mountbatten Windsor has been living since he was evicted earlier this year from the Royal Lodge, his residence in Windsor. The police later confirmed that the man they had arrested was released under investigation, a designation that indicated that the investigation was not over. Photos shared by the BBC showed Mr. Mountbatten Windsor in the back seat of a car, appearing to leave a police station where he had been held. Under British law, the police generally cannot hold suspects for more than 24 hours without charging them. In the British legal system, the investigation could continue with charges filed at a later date. Mr. Mountbatten Windsor's representatives did not immediately respond to requests for comment. According to the guidance provided to British prosecutors, misconduct in public office is committed when a public officer willfully neglects to perform their duty or willfully misconducts themselves in abuse of the public trust. No case has ever tested whether a member of the royal family could be considered a public officer. But Mr. Mountbatten Windsor, in addition to serving as a government trade envoy, was a helicopter pilot for the Royal Navy during the war with Argentina over the Falkland Islands in 1982. He met Mr. Epstein in the late 1990s through Ghislaine Maxwell, then the financier's girlfriend and the daughter of the British media magnate Robert Maxwell. Mr. Mountbatten Windsor told the BBC in 2019 that the friendship was valuable, partly because of the networking opportunities it offered. Ms. Jeffrey had accused Mr. Epstein and Ms. Maxwell of recruiting her for sexual abuse under the guise of becoming a professional masseuse. In 2022, Mr. Mountbatten Windsor paid Ms. Jeffrey an undisclosed sum to settle a lawsuit in a New York court that accused him of raping her when she was 17. He did not admit any wrongdoing in the case. Ms. Jeffrey died by suicide last year. On Thursday, her family welcomed Mr. Mountbatten Windsor's arrest. "At last," the family said, "today our broken hearts have been lifted at the news that no one is above the law, not even royalty." That view was echoed by David Lammy, Britain's Deputy Prime Minister and Justice Secretary, who told the BBC that nobody in this country is above the law, and that the investigation must happen in the usual way. The arrest underscored a striking contrast in the official responses to the Epstein files, which have tainted the reputations of powerful figures in business, academia, entertainment, and politics. The British authorities have moved aggressively to investigate the possibility of crimes emerging from the documents, while the police in the United States have not. President Trump, discussing the arrest with reporters, said, "I think it's a shame. I think it's very sad. I think it's so bad for the royal family." In Britain, the police are also investigating whether Peter Mandelson, a longtime British political operative who served as ambassador to the United States, committed misconduct in public office by sharing sensitive government documents with Mr. Epstein. He has denied any criminal wrongdoing. The files also revealed that Sarah Ferguson, Mr. Mountbatten Windsor's ex-wife and the one-time Duchess of York, carried on a long and personal correspondence with Mr. Epstein long after he was convicted of soliciting prostitution in 2008. Dueling protests at South Korean ex-leader's sentencing highlight political rift. As a judge reprimanded former President Yoon Suk-yeol for amplifying political tribalism, demonstrators from warring camps blared slogans outside the courtroom. By Max Kim and Jin Yu Young. The dueling protests outside the Seoul courthouse where former President Yoon Suk-yeol of South Korea was sentenced to life imprisonment on Thursday were heavy on bitterness and retributive fervor, familiar sentiments in a country with deep political polarization. The court found Mr. Yoon guilty of leading an insurrection in 2024, when he declared martial law and sent special forces into the National Assembly to arrest his political opponents. The presiding judge said he had pushed South Korean society into an extreme state of conflict between warring political camps. On Thursday, those tensions were on display outside the courthouse, where pro- and anti-Yoon groups blared their respective slogans, and calls for Mr. Yoon and his political nemesis, President Lee Jae-myung, to receive the death penalty, through loudspeakers. In one camp, hundreds of Yoon supporters gathered in front of a makeshift stage with a screen playing a live broadcast of the trial. Some waved American flags, a symbol commonly used by South Korea's far-right movement. One man stood atop a van wearing a jacket that said MKGA, short for Make Korea Great Again. Mr. Yoon has enthusiastically courted such crowds ever since impeachment. Several blocks away, a smaller cluster of anti-Yoon protesters chanted for the death penalty, the punishment that prosecutors had sought for the ex-president. One demonstrator, Choi Jae-jik, said he had spent nearly every weekend over the past year joining rallies calling for a conviction. "Martial law threw the country into chaos," said Mr. Choi, a translator. "He took away precious time away from my children." "Even the death sentence wouldn't be enough," said Kim Mo-jun, a college student in his 20s. Mr. Yoon himself showed little emotion in court. After his sentence was read aloud, a television camera showed him averting his gaze from the judge. But his supporters and political adversaries were clearly not satisfied with the verdict. Mr. Yoon's lawyers called the sentence political theater, saying in a statement that the judges had ignored the truth and knelt before the political force that wanted to purge its enemy. They also vowed to fight to the end. "It's unbelievable," Kim Suk-min, a Yoon supporter in her 60s, said outside the courthouse as she held a South Korean flag in support of the former president. "I am at a loss for words." On the other side of the political divide, Jung Chung-rae, the leader of the governing Democratic Party, expressed disappointment that the sentence had fallen short of the death penalty. He described the outcome as a ruling that defied the South Korean public's sense of justice. Defense Department and Anthropic square off in dispute over AI safety. How artificial intelligence will be used in future battlefields is an issue that has turned increasingly political and may put Anthropic in a bind. By Shira Frankel and Julian E. Barnes. For months, the Department of Defense and the artificial intelligence company Anthropic have been negotiating a contract over the use of AI on classified systems by the Pentagon. This week, those discussions erupted in a war of words. On Monday, a person close to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth told Axios that the Pentagon was close to declaring the startup a supply chain risk, a move that would sever ties between the company and the U.S. military. Anthropic was caught off guard and internally scrambled to pinpoint what had set off the department, two people with knowledge of the company said. At the heart of the fight is how AI will be used in future battlefields. Anthropic told defense officials that it did not want its AI used for mass surveillance of Americans or deployed in autonomous weapons that had no humans in the loop, two people involved in the discussion said. But Mr. Hegseth and others in the Pentagon were furious that Anthropic would resist the military's using AI as it saw fit. Current and former officials briefed on the discussion said, as tensions escalated, the Department of Defense accused the San Francisco-based company of catering to an elite liberal workforce by demanding additional protections. The disagreement underlines how political the issue of AI has become in the Trump administration. President Trump and his advisors want to expand technology's use, reducing export restrictions on AI chips, and criticizing state regulations that could be perceived as inhibitors to AI development. But Anthropic's chief executive, Dario Amodei, has long said AI needs strict limits around it to prevent it from potentially wrecking the world. Amelia Probasco, a senior fellow at Georgetown Center for Security and Emerging Technology, said it was important that the relationship between the Pentagon and Anthropic not be doomed. There are warfighters using Anthropic for good and legitimate purposes, and ripping this out of their hands seems like a total disservice, she said. What the nation needs is both sides at the table discussing what we can do with this technology to make us safer. In a statement, Sean Parnell, the Pentagon spokesman, said the department's relationship with Anthropic was being reviewed. Our nation requires that our partners be willing to help our warfighters win in any fight, he said. Ultimately, this is about our troops and the safety of the American people. Anthropic said it was committed to using its AI to support U.S. national security and was having productive conversations in good faith with the Department of War on how to continue that work and get these complex issues right. A Pentagon official praised the other AI companies that have been working on the Pentagon's unclassified systems. The official said the department had an agreement in place for one of the firms to begin work on the classified system, replacing Anthropic. The Defense Department has used Anthropic's technology for more than a year as part of a $200 million AI pilot program to analyze imagery and other intelligence data and conduct research. Google, OpenAI, and Elon Musk's xAI are also part of the program. But Anthropic's AI chatbot, Claude, was the most widely used by the agency and the only one on classified systems. Thanks to its integration with technology from Palantir, a data analytics company that works with the federal government, according to defense officials with knowledge of the technology. The New York Times has sued OpenAI and Microsoft, accusing them of copyright infringement of news content related to AI systems. The companies have denied those claims. On January 9th, Mr. Hegseth released a memo calling on AI companies to remove restrictions on their technology. The memo led AI companies, including Anthropic, to renegotiate their contracts. Anthropic asked for limits to how its AI tools could be deployed. Anthropic has long been more vocal than other AI companies on safety issues. In a podcast interview in 2023, Dr. Amodei said there was a 10 to 25% chance that AI could destroy humanity. Internally, the company has strict guidelines that bar its technology from being used to facilitate violence. In January, Dr. Amodei wrote in an essay on his personal website that using AI for domestic mass surveillance and mass propaganda seemed entirely illegitimate to him. He added that AI automated weapons could greatly increase the risks of democratic governments turning them against their own people to seize power. In contract negotiations, the Defense Department pushed back against Anthropic, saying it would use AI in accordance with the law, according to people with knowledge of the conversations. On Sunday, the Wall Street Journal reported that Anthropic's technology had been used in January in the U.S. military operation to capture Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro, and that Anthropic employees had raised concerns with Palantir about the role its technology played. Mr. Hegseth and others in the Pentagon were angered by what they saw as Anthropic's resistance, current and former officials briefed on the matter said. A Pentagon official said a senior executive from Anthropic had asked a senior official from Palantir if Anthropic's AI model had been used in the Maduro raid. The Pentagon official said the exchange had alarmed Palantir because it implied that Anthropic might disapprove of its models being used in the operation. As a result, the Palantir executive contacted the Pentagon official said. Two people close to Anthropic said only one employee had raised questions about the Maduro operation with a Palantir employee in a routine meeting. Anthropic said it had not discussed this with or expressed concerns to any industry partners outside of routine discussions on strictly technical matters. Palantir did not respond to a request for comment. If Anthropic is categorized as a supply chain risk by the Defense Department, it will find itself in rare company. The designation is typically used only on firms that do business with China or take supplies from China. Given that Claude and other Anthropic products are widely integrated across the department, it would be difficult to replace the technology, two officers who have used the technology said. Google's and OpenAI's AI contracts with the Pentagon are for unclassified systems. On February 9th, OpenAI said in a blog post that it was expanding its work with the Pentagon. It is important for the United States and other democratic countries to understand how, with the proper safeguards, AI can help protect people, deter adversaries, and prevent future conflict, OpenAI wrote. Google and XAI did not respond to requests for comment. Despite the public fighting, negotiations between the Defense Department and Anthropic were continuing this week, two defense officials said. U.S. military moves into place for possible strikes in Iran. President Trump has given no indication that he has made a decision about how to proceed, as diplomatic talks continue. By Helene Cooper, Eric Schmidt, and Ronan Bergamot. The rapid buildup of U.S. forces in the Middle East has progressed to the point that President Trump has the option to take military action against Iran as soon as this weekend, administration and Pentagon officials said, leaving the White House with high-stakes choices about pursuing diplomacy or war. Mr. Trump has given no indication that he has made a decision about how to proceed. But the drive to assemble a military force capable of striking Iran's nuclear program, its ballistic missiles, and accompanying launch sites has continued this week despite indirect talks between the two nations on Tuesday, with Iran seeking 2 weeks to come back with fleshed-out proposals for a diplomatic resolution. Mr. Trump has repeatedly demanded that Iran give up its nuclear program, including agreeing not to enrich any more uranium. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, whose country would potentially take part in an attack, has been pushing for action to weaken Iran's ability to launch missiles at Israel. Israeli forces, which have been on heightened alert for weeks, have been making more preparations for a possible war, and a meeting of Israel's security cabinet was moved to Sunday from Thursday, according to two Israeli defense officials. Many administration officials have expressed skepticism about the prospects of reaching a diplomatic deal with Tehran. The indirect talks on Tuesday in Geneva ended with what Iran's foreign minister said was agreement on a set of guiding principles. U.S. officials said the two sides made progress, but added that big gaps remain. Mr. Trump has repeatedly threatened that Iran must meet his terms or face severe consequences. But another attack, 8 months after a 12-day war in which Israel and the United States assaulted military and nuclear sites across Iran, would potentially carry substantial risks, including that Iran would respond with a ferocious barrage of missile strikes on Israel and on U.S. forces in the region. For a president who ran for office promising to keep the United States out of wars, Mr. Trump is now considering what would be at least the seventh American military attack in another country in the past year, and his second on Iran. Last June, after striking three Iranian nuclear sites, Mr. Trump declared that Iran's nuclear program had been obliterated. But now he is considering sending U.S. military back to continue the job. But unlike the U.S.-Israeli assault last June, Mr. Trump's objectives now are less clear. The U.S. military buildup includes dozens of refueling tankers rushed to the region by United States Central Command, more than 50 additional fighter jets, and two aircraft carrier strike groups, complete with their accompanying destroyers, cruisers, and submarines, U.S. officials said. The aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford, fresh from the Caribbean, where it was part of the naval fleet pressuring the Venezuelan government of President Nicolas Maduro, was approaching Gibraltar on Wednesday as it made its way to join the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln in the region. The president has always been very clear, though, with respect to Iran or any country around the world. Diplomacy is always his first option, and Iran would be very wise to make a deal with President Trump and with this administration, Caroline Levitt, the White House press secretary, said on Wednesday. He's always thinking about what's in the best interest of the United States of America, of our military, of the American people. And that's how he makes decisions with respect to military action, she added. In Israel, the two defense officials said that significant preparations were underway for the possibility of a joint strike with the United States, even though no decision has been made about whether to carry out such an attack. They said the planning envisions delivering a severe blow over a number of days, with the goal of forcing Iran into concessions at the negotiating table that it has so far been unwilling to make. The U.S. buildup suggests an array of possible Iranian targets, including short and medium-range missiles, missile storage depots, nuclear sites, and other military targets, such as headquarters of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. The ultimate decision on scope of targets is largely up to Mr. Trump, U.S. officials said. Administration and military officials said the United States has bolstered its defensive assets since the president initially threatened to strike Iran in January. At the time, Mr. Trump had requested options to respond to the Iranian government's bloody crackdown on protests. But more recently, he has threatened to attack if Iran failed to reach a deal to limit its nuclear program, and said that a massive armada was heading toward the country. Despite Mr. Trump's tough stance, the Pentagon last month was in a poor position to back him up. The 30,000 to 40,000 U.S. troops scattered around the Middle East, including at eight permanent bases, were low on air defenses to protect them from expected retaliation. The additional fighter jets necessary to conduct the kind of operation Mr. Trump spoke of were idling at American bases in Europe and as far away as the United States. Much of the military hardware in the Middle East accumulated over 20 years of war had since departed the region. But over the past month, the U.S. military has moved the necessary air defenses, including Patriot Missile Defense and Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, THAAD, systems, into the region. Both systems can intercept Iranian ballistic missiles. One military official said the U.S. military could now defend its troops, allies, and assets from any Iranian retaliation for American strikes on its nuclear and military targets, at least for a short campaign. But, the official said, the question remained as to whether the American military is ready to sustain a longer and wider war. The American buildup also includes dozens of additional F-35, F-22, and F-16 fighter jets that have been flowing from the United States to Europe and onward to the Middle East in recent days, according to flight tracking data and U.S. officials. Dozens of refueling planes, vital for a prolonged air campaign, have also been moved forward, those officials say. The second aircraft carrier, the Gerald Ford, and its three destroyer escorts could be in the Mediterranean by the weekend or early next week, military officials said. The Ford is likely to be deployed initially near the coast of Israel to defend Tel Aviv and other Israeli cities and towns, officials said. A military official said on Wednesday that the carriers have their own defense systems, including accompanying destroyers that can shoot down missiles aimed at them. It is difficult to hit an aircraft carrier with a ballistic missile, he said, if the carrier is moving rapidly. American B-2 bombers, which were used last year when Mr. Trump struck Iran, and other U.S.-based long-range bombers, are on a higher alert status, officials said. Senior national security officials have told the president that any operation that aims to change the Iranian leadership is not guaranteed to be a success, the official said. Mr. Trump's decision to put off his threatened Iran strikes last month, which two administration officials said came after military officials cautioned him that the Pentagon wasn't ready, may have allowed Iran to better prepare for an attack. Diplomacy may give the U.S. more time to get its military ready, but it also gives Iran more time to plan its retaliation, said Vali Nasser, an Iran expert at Johns Hopkins University. Ultimately, he added, the president has to weigh the cost of attacking Iran. Ironically, his approach has made those costs more likely. With new momentum, Republican states push broader limits for trans Americans. In states that once focused mainly on health care and sports for transgender minors, debates now revolve around the validity of transgender identity. By Amy Harmon. After a year in which the Trump administration has pressed to limit the ways Americans can identify as transgender in public life, Republicans are pushing the issue at the state level with new zeal. With legislative sessions underway in most states, hundreds of bills restricting transgender rights are under consideration as social conservatives seek to capitalize on Trump administration tailwinds and a shift in public opinion to codify an understanding of sex and gender as binary and fixed. In Kansas, lawmakers voted on Wednesday to invalidate the driver's licenses of transgender residents who changed the gender markers on their licenses under a state policy that started allowing such changes almost two decades ago. Idaho's House of Representatives this week advanced a bill that would allow people to sue private businesses that allow transgender people to use restrooms consistent with their gender identity. In Utah, legislators are weighing removing transgender people from groups protected by a state law barring discrimination in housing and employment. Oklahoma lawmakers are considering expanding the state's ban on gender transition medical treatment for minors to include adults. And a Florida House panel has advanced a bill prohibiting public sector employees from requiring workers to use the preferred pronouns of transgender coworkers. The barrage of bills allows a six-year stretch in which 27 state legislatures controlled by Republicans focused restrictions mainly on health care and sports for transgender minors. This year's proposals are more sweeping. They address trans adults as well as youths, seek to close loopholes in earlier laws, and mandate harsher penalties for violations. In state houses where lawmakers have previously sparred over specific scenarios, whether a trans girl who has not gone through male puberty has an advantage in track, for example, debates now revolve around the essential validity of transgender identity. Instead of arguing over whether transgender 16-year-olds should wait until age 18 to get access to cross-sex hormones, the question being posed in states like Kansas is whether, for the purposes of state law, someone can be trans at all. President Trump issued an executive order last year asserting that a person's sex is determined at conception and cannot be changed. But most efforts by federal agencies to carry out that order are being challenged in the courts. That has left much of the immediate action on the issue to the states. May Mailman, a lawyer who helped to craft Mr. Trump's executive order, said that the federal government has leverage on the issue. But your day-to-day life is going to be governed by the states. Sponsors of these bills say they are necessary for protecting women, ensuring fair competition, and shielding teenagers from medical transition that they may later regret. They also frame their proposals in broader terms, arguing that biological sex is the most meaningful way to categorize individuals, and that affirming gender identities that don't line up with a person's sex is a denial of reality, which comes with its own harms. Supporters of transgender rights say they view this year's state proposals as a concerted effort to chip away at protections of trans people at the state level to build support for even broader limits at a national level. There's a clear pathway between the states and federal policies under this administration, said the Reverend Jasmine Beach Ferrara, Executive Director of Campaign for Southern Equality, an LGBTQ advocacy organization based in North Carolina. Our general analysis is that they will go as far as they think they can in enforcing what's fundamentally a very narrow ideological position, that being transgender does not exist. That is not a reality. Indeed, conservative activists said that raising the prospect of broader restrictions at the state level could pressure Democrats in Congress to help enact limits on access to sports and medical transition for minors nationwide. The more states pass these common sense protections that helps create the momentum for ultimate federal action, said Matt Sharp, Director of Legislative Advocacy for Alliance Defending Freedom, a group that has crafted legislation on sports limitations that many red states have enacted. We would love to see these protections no matter where a woman lives, whether she's in California or Florida. Over the last decade, many Democrats have argued that gender identity is central to who someone is, and that excluding transgender people from sports and public accommodations is a form of discrimination. Starting in 2015, Democrats sought to amend the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to include gender identity as a protected class. But since 2024, as trans issues became a focus of Mr. Trump's campaign, Democratic strategists have debated the party's approach. Last year, a handful of Democrats in a few states, including five state lawmakers in Pennsylvania and two Texas Democrats in Congress, crossed party lines to support trans athlete bans. With midterm elections looming this year, Republican strategists said that the prospect of tighter restrictions at the state level could help portray Democratic candidates as out of step with voters on transgender issues. Terry Schilling, president of the American Principles Project, an advocacy group, said his group plans to spend $20 million on advertising focused on transgender policies this year to replicate what it saw as success in appealing to a critical sliver of voters in 2024. Polling has found that Americans have become more supportive of restrictions on trans people in recent years. A majority still want to see trans people protected from discrimination in jobs, housing, and public spaces. But two-thirds of Americans favor barring trans athletes from women's sports, and about half support requiring trans people to use public bathrooms that match their biological sex. Republican voters are overwhelmingly in favor of outlawing healthcare professionals from prescribing medication for gender transition to minors. More than one-third of Democrats now favor that approach, up from about a quarter in 2022, according to a 2025 Pew Research poll. Supporters of transgender rights attribute the shift largely to Republican political ads and to the Trump administration, which in executive orders and agency policies has called it a false claim to identify as transgender, declared transgender Americans unfit for military service, and portrayed teens who undergo gender transition hormone therapies as mutilated. The shifting sentiments may be reflected in this year's state legislative sessions in Democrat-led states, which are for the most part considering incremental protections for trans rights rather than sweeping new policies. In New Jersey and Hawaii, for example, Democratic lawmakers are pressing for additional layers of protection for the privacy of transgender patients' health information. New York's state Senate has advanced a bill that would allow buildings to more easily convert single-sex bathrooms to all-gender bathrooms. Only a fraction of the transgender-related bills under consideration in state legislatures are likely to be enacted, and some of the same proposals have failed in previous sessions. But even the prospect of a broad debate over limits on transgender people across many states and over many issues, can make it harder for people to openly identify as transgender, supporters of trans rights said. Logan Casey, who tracks transgender-related legislation for the Movement Advancement Project, an LGBTQ advocacy group, said that the expansion into trying to limit so many areas of transgender life suggests that the goal is not to solve a specific policy concern, like fairness in sports, but to regulate gender nonconformity more broadly. His tracking over the last 6 years found that states that adopted a restriction on transgender people had always gone on to pass more of such limits. In Kansas, the measure barring trans people from changing gender markers on driver's licenses followed a long fight. The newly adopted law also allows people to seek financial damages from transgender Kansans who use a bathroom that does not match their biological sex. Republican lawmakers this week overrode a veto by Governor Laura Kelly, a Democrat, on the measure, which reflected a significant expansion of restrictions in a long-standing fight over trans identity in the state. In 2023, Kansas was the first state in the nation to codify into state statute definitions of sex, woman, and man, which supporters said could prevent trans women from claiming access to women-only spaces and sports teams based on their gender identity. Republican leaders argued that the definitions should apply to driver's licenses, too, but courts sided with state officials who said that driver's licenses sought a person's gender rather than sex. Under the new driver's license measure approved this week, lawmakers also redefined the words in the state's 2023 law to say that both sex and gender mean a person's biological sex, either male or female, at birth. State Representative Lindsey Vonn, a Democrat, said at a hearing last month that the measure is about discriminating against trans people. Representative Susan Humphreys, a Republican, and the bill's sponsor countered, "No, it's about sex, the definition of gender and sex. The bill," she added, "has to do with truth." Mr. Casey of the Movement Advancement Project, who is transgender, said that the Kansas measure drew his attention for what he sees as an element of humiliation. Under the new law, the licenses of several hundred transgender Kansans will become invalid once it takes effect in the coming days, and they must surrender the old licenses to the State Motor Vehicles Agency. The trans people in Kansas who have been able to legally follow the rules and update their gender marker are now being required to come in and surrender that document. "I just think it's really remarkable," Mr. Casey said. "I'd like to be normal. Can height surgery make them happy? Limb lengthening can add inches to a person's stature, but its risks have made it controversial." By Isabella Quay. Aaron Trin was 5'6", and he was unhappy. His height was something he dwelled on constantly. In public, Mr. Trin, 25, mentally measured himself against others, and it seemed that he was always looking up. "I just didn't want to be that person sticking out in a negative way," he said. "I just had to get this out of my head." Then, 2 years ago, he came across some videos on TikTok about height surgery, a procedure in which the leg bones are fractured and implanted with devices that slowly stretch them over several months, resulting in longer legs. Limb lengthening has been practiced by orthopedic surgeons for decades as a means of correcting deformities or length discrepancies. But in height surgery, also called stature lengthening, it can be used for patients who wish to add a few inches to their height. The cosmetic procedure has grabbed more attention recently. Patient numbers are difficult to track, but four clinics in the United States said that they had received an uptick in interest over the past decade. Mr. Trin, an engineering student and ultramarathon runner from Houston, knew the surgery carried the risk of complications. Bones could heal poorly, making them more fragile, or harden at rates that could cause discrepancies. His muscles could be tightened or weakened. There was risk of infection, fat embolism, and permanent nerve damage. And he would have to avoid putting weight on his legs for several months, with a full recovery taking at least half a year or longer. The risks have made height surgery a contentious topic, and the procedure is expensive. It can cost between $70,000 and $150,000 in the United States, driving some people to seek treatment abroad. Mr. Trin decided to consult a clinic in Florida. His father, Tan, one of the first people he confided in about his insecurity, used his savings to front the $140,000 or so his son needed for the procedure and associated costs. Tan, who was 5'2", said he could understand his son's feelings, having struggled with his own. "It's kind of stigma," he said, "and I just feel so bad." He didn't want his son to go through life with the same mental suffering. They booked the surgery for May 2025. Aaron said that it was an uncomfortable topic. He and his father didn't even tell his mother about the surgery until they had already paid for it, he said. The biggest response a lot of people are going to get is, "Dude, you can't change your height. Just learn to be confident in yourself," said Mr. Trin, who did not believe that psychological therapy would have helped him. "It's easier said than done." Cosmetic surgery has become an increasingly mainstream topic of conversation in recent years, thanks in part to social media and a rising cultural comfort with aesthetic intervention. Public figures have acknowledged breast augmentations, facelifts, and other major procedures. Clinics have directly marketed their services to consumers online. Height surgery has likewise attracted attention, used recently as a plot point in the film Materialists, and fodder for online debate. Even among cosmetic interventions, the intensity required to become taller has roused divisions. The idea of breaking healthy bones in pursuit of an ideal height can seem extreme, if not absurd. And the potential to alter one's height ties into a charged conversation about its significance, particularly for many men in dating and at work. Mr. Trin is one of only a few who have been fully open about their experiences, driven by the hope that others interested in height surgery might feel less shame. At least four height surgery patients the New York Times spoke to requested anonymity to share their experience because they had not told family, friends, or colleagues. One man who went to Turkey for his surgery explained his crutches by telling friends he'd had back surgery or an accident. After his return, issues including poor bone healing eventually pushed him to seek out an orthopedic surgeon in Baltimore. "It felt bad to lie," he said, and he was sure his relatives had noticed he was taller, but he said he had few regrets and planned to take his secret to the grave. "I wasn't designed to be tall, but I'd like to be normal," said Presley St. James, 31, who lives in Pennsylvania. As a child, Mr. St. James had been diagnosed with growth hormone deficiency, and his mother had decided against growth hormone therapy. But he felt that his height, 5'4", had made him a bullying target at work. He had dreams of being an actor and worried that he was too short. His endocrine disorder meant that insurance covered much of his procedure, he said, though he is an exception. Insurance rarely covers the procedure for cosmetic reasons. "A lot of guys like to say, 'Well, I'm fine with just the way that I am,'" said Mr. St. James, who started stature lengthening last August. "Deep down inside, no, they're not." A debated field in its infancy. Height, an attribute that is largely set by adolescence, can be a sensitive issue for those who consider themselves short. Researchers have correlated being taller with greater income, high-status jobs, and positive perceptions of leadership. And it can be a thorny topic in an era of dating apps that can filter for height preferences. Adults have long resorted to shoe lifts or high heels. Those seeking more permanent results have pursued growth hormone therapy, which can add height when prescribed for children, but is also much debated. And they have turned to the field of limb lengthening, where equipment has advanced. People have been bothered by height for a long time, said Dr. Dror Paley, a surgeon and the founder of the Paley Orthopedic and Spine Institute in West Palm Beach, Florida. He began performing limb lengthening in the 1980s after training under Dr. Gavril Elizarov, a physician in the former Soviet Union who invented one method. This was the beginning of being able to do something about it, Dr. Paley said. The technique offered a new, if painfully arduous, pathway for people to correct medical problems in their limbs. But soon, Dr. Paley said, he was approached by people who wanted the procedure for cosmetic reasons. He did it quietly at first, he said, and made his patients undergo a psychological evaluation. Orthopedic surgeons, he said, are trained to treat pain and disability rather than cosmetic problems. These days, he is one of a small group of orthopedic surgeons worldwide who offer cosmetic stature surgery and believes the field is in its infancy. The way people feel about their height is really personal, said Dr. Ellen Katz Westrick, a licensed clinical psychologist in New York, and it can be influenced by early experiences, environment, and personality traits. Over the years, Dr. Katz Westrick has evaluated multiple prospective height surgery patients to help them decide what was best for them. They'll describe it as like the dull hum that just doesn't go away, she said. I've heard it described to me as, I'm a tall person in the body of a short person. Dr. Katz Westrick said that her role was to help patients, not promote height surgery. Surgery, she said, is generally not advised for people who experience body dysmorphic disorder, a mental health condition that can be better treated with cognitive behavior therapy or serotonin-enhancing drugs. But for patients set on it, the procedure seemed to address their chronic height-related distress, she said. I think for some people, the concrete fix does the trick. Okay, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you.